at the National Museum of Natural Sciences in Madrid, Spain.
There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
In sports, Wrigley Field is going to host an NHL game on New Year's Day 2009 when the defending Stanley Cup champion Detroit Red Wings meet the Chicago Blackhawks outdoors in the home park of the Chicago Cubs. It will be the NHL's second Winter Classic, as on January 1st in Buffalo. The Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Buffalo Sabres 2-1 before a crowd of 71,217. Notre Dame has a new athletic director. Indianapolis lawyer Jack Swarbrick has been put in charge of the school's athletic department, succeeding Kevin White, who left the school at the end of May to become the AD at Duke. The governing bodies of golf have joined forces to push for the sport to be added to the Olympic schedule in 2016. The PGA Tour, Royal and Ancient, European PGA Tour, LPGA, U.S. Golf Association, PGA of America, and Augusta National have all joined forces to lobby the International Olympic Committee. Michelle Wee, Nancy Lopez, Pat Hurst, and defending champ Sherry Steinhauer will be in the field when the State Farm Classic tees off tomorrow in Springfield, Illinois. Wee is playing on a sponsor exemption because she's a full-time college student at Stanford and not on the LPGA Tour. Patrick Harrington cut short another practice round today, and last year's British Open champion says he may not be able to defend his title. An injured wrist limited Harrington to just 3 full swings, and he can't say if he'll be ready when play opens tomorrow at Royal Birkdale. And IndyCar Series driver Sarah Fisher has a new primary sponsor, Dollar General, for 2 races this year, bringing a boost to the struggling team. In May, her initial sponsors backed out of their deals after Fisher and her husband poured their life savings into her new race team. She found new sponsors for the Indianapolis 500, but Fisher's car was taken out in a crash on lap 106. Fans pitched in, donating more than $50,000 to help Fisher offset costs. That's sports.
WILL programming is made possible by Tires Plus Total Car Care, located at Prospect and Market View in Champaign. Tires Plus provides complete car repair and maintenance. More information is available at 366-3201.
Today we buy whatever we need from the store, but what would happen if we had to make our own butter or spin our own wool? We needed these kinds of skills to survive, and many of them took centuries to learn. Some people are working to keep these skills alive. Lucy Martin followed a man who works in a historic flour mill. He's taken the time to learn old skills that he says still matter today.
Bill Shubbs volunteers his time at Watson's Mill in Ottawa, Ontario. The old mill is powered by water. The water turns 2 huge millstones that cut grain into flour. A few years ago, Shubbs learned how to maintain the millstones. He's about to put those lessons to the test on 1-ton wheels that are nearly 5 feet in diameter.
Well, here are your beauties.
They are, absolutely. 1860s beauties, if you will.
These date all the way back to then?
Yes, ma'am, they do.
Millstones have something in common with car tires. Their tread eventually wears down. These wheels need to be dressed. Someone has to grind off encrusted flour and rechip the many grooves and surfaces using hammer-sized picks.
Anyways, I'm going to
give this a whirl.
It's not a trait you find in the yellow pages. Bill Shubbs grew up on a farm. He still keeps some of his family's land in production, but he spent a lot of his career helping build things for NASA. He thinks it's important to know many skills, old or new.
Yes, keep the technology. It's great. I love it too. Okay, but we need to still keep our feet on the ground and be realistic about everything.
Shubbs says one reason to keep these traditional mills running is because of the kind of bread you can make from them. These days, flour is typically milled in modern factories using high-speed metal rollers. A place like Watson's Mill can't possibly match those for volume or price. But stone ground flour is a specialty product. It isn't always found at your nearby supermarket. The high fiber, whole grain is cut, not crushed, by the stone's sharp grooves. The process preserves wheat's natural oils and nutrients. Larry Ellis is a big fan of bread made from this flour.
I get at least one loaf every week. Looks like it came out of your mother's oven sort of thing, you know?
Besides promoting things like flavor and nutrition, Bill Schaub says there's also a sort of insurance factor.
This grist mill here is completely water-powered, so if all else fails, we can always mill flour.
To keep the millstones in good shape, Schaub's had to learn from the experts. He came here to Upper Canada Village, an 1860s-era heritage park with its own grist mill. Liam Carson works at the park. He says maintaining many different skills is important because society doesn't always know when they might be needed.
If you can find a way of doing things that's better, it doesn't matter if it's high-tech or low-tech, it doesn't matter if it's now or then, better is better. And the more of these parallel paths you have that still exist, that's a wealth of possibilities that can be accessed.
Back inside Watson's Mill, the freshly dressed millstones are ready to go. This is the test run. Bill Schaub's watches the gold-brown wheat trickle down while checking on the flour as it comes out.
There's still a little bit of tweaking to do, but other than that, I'm happy. Good learning experience, that's for sure.
Sometimes, Schaub's worries that too many skills are getting lost. He'd like to see more people taking the time to pick them up and pass them on. Old or new, he thinks we need them all. For the Environment Report, I'm Lucy Martin.
There are few things as aggravating as getting stuck in a traffic jam, but for some drivers crossing a busy bridge from the U.S. to Canada, there's aggravation on top of aggravation. Joyce Kryzak reports that a plan to build an additional bridge is being blocked by concern for endangered species.
Every year, millions of people cross the Niagara River on the Peace Bridge that connects Buffalo, New York to Canada, and many of them sit for hours in a traffic jam. The border crossing and passport checks do slow things down, but there are just not enough lanes for all the traffic. ICE delivery man Tim Holliday is one of those who's fed up with hours and hours of bridge delays.
Like, I got to go to duty free here, and when I coming out here, I got to come back through customs, and they always, what were you doing in Canada? I'm just sick of the hassles, you know?
Transportation officials say a new bridge is needed. The traffic problems will only get worse. Because of increased trade, about 11 million additional travelers are expected to be using the Peace Bridge over the next decade. And that's a headache for Ron Reines. He manages the busy international bridge crossing. He says building a new bridge would help with the traffic delays and help with national security.
This is a border improvement project designed to address redundancy issues, security issues, traffic flow, all of those things, maintenance issues, all of those are impacted by not being able to proceed with the project.
A second bridge has been designed. It's a cable-stayed bridge with towers as high as the Washington Monument. Brian Higgins is a congressman for the area. He's pushing for federal approval of the impressive cable design. He says the region needs an iconic symbol of progress.
We're in the 11th hour of a project that's been going on for 15 years. We need additional capacity at the Peace Bridge to promote the efficient, predictable flow of commerce between the United States and Canada. We need an iconic bridge, a signature bridge.
But that signature bridge is exactly the kind of design that's dangerous to many birds. And the Niagara River is a virtual highway for nearly 300 kinds of birds. The cables can be invisible to the birds. They can fly into them and die. Among those birds is the common tern. It's an endangered species. Terry Yonker knows these and other birds better than most.
We probably documented somewhere in the range of 500,000 birds. And there's a common tern right there.
Yonker is a scientist and a former Ornithological Society president. He wrote an environmental study that recommended against the bridge's cable design because it could kill hundreds of different kinds of birds, including the endangered tern. Yonker says even if it avoided hitting the cables by flying over the bridge, the tern would be stressed by such a tall bridge design. That's because it has to make 8 trips over the bridge each day to feed its young. But he says it probably wouldn't make that many trips if the new bridge is any higher than the Peace Bridge.
You raise that structure and they will expend more energy to do that. If they expend a lot of energy doing this, they'll maybe make 5 or 6 trips a day. And that means one or two chicks are going to get less food out there.
The other concern is the food source for the tern. Fishery experts say the location of the piers would change water currents, eventually killing off the emerald shiner. That's the tiny fish the endangered bird feeds on. So a new design is being recommended, a lower bridge with smaller piers to protect the tern and the emerald shiner. Federal and state agencies are working to find a way to mitigate the threat to the birds and fish by altering the plans for the new bridge. But environmental experts say you can't mitigate extinction. They say the common tern is more than an endangered bird. They say it's a warning about what happens when sound science is ignored for the sake of progress. But try explaining that to the people stuck in traffic for hours because a second bridge is being blocked to save a small bird and a little fish. For the Environment Report, I'm Joyce Kryzak.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
On Monday, President Bush lifted a ban on exploring for oil and gas in the deep waters of the U.S. Outer Continental Shelf. His father put that ban in place 18 years ago. Yesterday, the president held his first White House news conference since April, and he urged Congress to lift an even older ban to help boost domestic oil production. Democratic leaders in Congress reacted coolly to the president's demand, but they seemed to leave a door open to putting the issue to a vote. NPR's David Wellna has the story.
As President Bush prodded Congress to lift its 27-year ban on oil and gas exploration in the Outer Continental Shelf, he portrayed top congressional Democrats as being out of touch with the majority of Americans. Recent polls show they favor such exploration.
Democratic leaders had been delaying action on offshore exploration, and now they have an opportunity to show that they finally heard the frustrations of the American people. They should match the action I have taken. Repeal the congressional ban and pass legislation to facilitate responsible offshore exploration.
But when House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was later asked about the president's demand to lift the ban, she accused him of ignoring what she said was foremost on Americans' minds.
This economy needs the president's attention, and he doesn't need to have any diversionary tactics about drilling offshore, but it isn't, by his own admission, going to have any effect for many years to come.
The top Democrat in the Senate seemed more receptive to letting lawmakers vote on lifting the drilling ban. Majority Leader Harry Reid said he wants to focus first on cracking down on oil futures speculators. And if he gets bipartisan support for that, he'd be open to Republican amendments, which could include lifting the drilling ban.
I'm not ruling it out. What I'm saying is that right now the Democratic caucus does not support this flawed proposal of the president to allow states to determine what can happen on federal lands.
That's because Republicans want to let seaside states have a say on offshore drilling and also reap royalties from any oil production. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says he knows of at least 10 Senate Democrats who now favor increasing offshore exploration.
They're acknowledging a groundswell of public opinion, even among self-described liberals, in favor of more domestic supply.
It's an issue that McConnell says his Democratic colleagues oppose at their peril this election year. David Wellna, NPR News, the Capitol.
In a couple of swing states, Ohio and Florida, most voters, in fact, 7 out of 10 voters, say the economy is one of the things that will matter most in November. In order to understand the economic issues having the greatest impact on voters, NPR teamed up with the Kaiser Family Foundation and Harvard School of Public Health. They conducted a poll in the two states. NPR's Greg Allen reports that in Florida, half those polled said they are struggling with multiple economic problems.
There's the collapse of the housing market and the decline in home values. Also a credit crunch, making it hard for consumers to borrow their way out of trouble. And then the triple or quadruple whammy, spiraling fuel and food prices. In the new poll, more than three-quarters of people in Florida said they were facing at least one serious economic problem. Half said they were struggling with three or more. The big ones? It's jobs, gas prices, housing, and health care. Molly Ann Brody with the Kaiser Family Foundation says it's not just people with low and middle incomes who are affected.
The higher income level folks are still reporting challenges. Their challenges are just different. Their challenges are with declining home values, with being able to buy or sell their house, with their gas, with losing money in the stock market. So I think one of the things that is different about this particular situation is that you are seeing people across the income spectrum suffering.
The poll found broad similarity in how Ohioans and Floridians rate their economic problems. Both say their inability to get a good job or a raise in pay is a top concern. But in Florida, the collapse in home values ranks higher as an economic problem than in Ohio. And for people in the real estate, banking, and construction industries, it's also a jobs issue. Tom Heinrich is a 65-year-old mortgage broker from Pompano Beach. Most of his business is in the two states hit hardest by the housing bust, California and Florida.
It's destroyed what I had just a few short years ago. I personally have seen a dramatic decline in income and opportunity, and I don't see it recovering quickly or any time in the near future.
But in Florida, Ohio, and nationally, the clear number one problem for Americans now is gas prices.
We absolutely think twice about driving. We think three times about driving.
Dee Moscona is a 47-year-old attorney and mother in Miami. Like 55% of people polled in Florida, she cited rising gas prices as her top economic challenge.
I decided not to send my kids to camp this summer because I couldn't afford it. So we decided a bunch of moms to get together and do like a mommy camp where no mom wanted to drive.
The other major economic concern in Florida? The cost of health care. In the poll conducted by NPR, the Kaiser Family Foundation, and Harvard School of Public Health, more than a quarter of Floridians say they're having trouble paying medical bills. More than half say they've delayed getting needed care because of the cost. And 65-year-old Alvis May from Miami says just because you're covered by Medicare, that doesn't mean you can find affordable health care.
Well, we find that Medicare has not been rewarding the physicians enough that many times it's difficult to find a doctor who will take Medicare. So even though you think you're insured, you can't find a doctor to provide treatment, you might as well not have Medicare.
More than 4 in 10 Floridians polled believe that expanding health coverage to all Americans would do a great deal to help fix the country's economic problems. A similar number say the same thing about reducing health care costs. But according to the poll, the top two things people in Florida say would help the most: stop American jobs from going overseas and pull U.S. troops out of Iraq. For Miami attorney and mom Dee Moscona, Iraq is an economic issue.
Absolutely. Iraq is draining everything. It's a demoralizing, horrible thing that we're stuck with, that we have to live with.
Overall, the NPR, Kaiser, Harvard poll confirms with numbers what most of us already knew. The economy is bad, Americans are hurting, and they're looking to their political leaders for help. But amid all the negatives, Molly Ann Brody of the Kaiser Family Foundation says the poll shows that on one point, people in Florida are optimistic.
Majorities in Florida across all income groups believe that the president can do a lot or a little to improve the economy. So there is certainly an expectation that is set up out there that says that a president can actually address this.